Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome back. So first of all, I just wanted to let you know about the order that we're going to be studying Hilchos Kashrus, since you might have wondered. More or less, we're going to be following the order of the Shulchan Aruch. So last week we did Siman Pei Zayin, and today, Be'ezras Hashem, we're going to do Siman Pei Ches. Why am I following the order of the Shulchan Aruch? Mostly because that way I can, hopefully I won't forget something. Meaning to say, if I make up my own order, then I might have skipped a chunk. So at least in terms of the things that are covered in the Shulchan Aruch, I hope to get them. So that is more or less explains the order of why we're doing things in the order that we're doing them. One other point, I hope that to do a little bit of Parsha at the end of every week, assuming that we finish the topic with some time to spare, we don't have 35 minutes of questions. I can't imagine this week we'll have as many questions as last week. I couldn't imagine last week it had as many questions as it did. But so we'll see. But that's my goal. Okay, so I'm going to start with... Yes? Louder? Louder. Okay, well, you could come closer. I will try. Okay, so I'm going to start with a question that came up last night. I like eating leftovers. Well, I don't know if I like eating leftovers, but I don't like throwing out leftovers. So what happened on my kids don't like leftovers. So what happened Sunday night is that I eat the leftovers from Shabbos, which are very good, and my kids had something milchix. We're all at the same table. So the question we're going to deal with today is eating dairy and meat at the same table. What things do I have to do to avoid any problems and the like? So this is, as we said, a common question. If roommates or even families eating two different types of things. So the basis of the prohibition that you might be familiar with is from a Mishnah on Chulin, Kuf Gimel. V'asar lahalos afilu basar of imagvina ala shulchan. You may not have even chicken with cheese on a single table. There's actually some that are medayik dafka cheese, but not a cup of milk, but we assume it's really anything meat with anything dairy. So why is that? So Rav Yosef in the Gemara says the following chiddush. He says, you see from this Mishnah that basar of b'chalav, chicken and milk, is an iser d'oraisa. Why? Because if it was an iser d'rabanan, so then it's a violation of a gzeira l'gzeira. What does that mean? We know that Chazal, that the rabbis have certain legislative authority when it comes to the law. That the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, for example, asusiyag l'Torah, that's true on an individual level, but also broadly speaking, Chazal made a siyag, fences around the laws, in order to make sure that we don't violate the law. A fence around the law, a protection along the law. One of the psukim quoted for this idea is asu mishmeres lemishmarti. You should make a fence around my fence, so that we don't violate the Torah. Chazal made fences, made dinim derabanan. However, there are limitations on what kind of gzeros can be made. Can anything become an iser derabanan? So one of the important rules in this respect is that you could have a gzera, but not a gzera l'gzera. Gzera means a fence, a decree, but not a decree against a decree. Now remember, chicken with milk, is that aser midiraisa the way we paskin? No, only aser midirabanan. What is it? It's a gzera. So let's say, Chazal were to say, not only can't you have chicken with milk, but you also can't have milk and chicken at the same table. One person eating any chicken and one person drinking milk. So that would be a gzera l'gzera. Can't do that. So says Rav Yosef, this Mishnah must be like the opinion that says that even chicken with milk is an iser d'oraisa. Remember last week we saw there was such an opinion among the Tanaim. However, if that's true, then it would mean that it doesn't apply to us, right? We, as we mentioned, hold that chicken with milk is only d'rabanan. So there would be no problem according to what we paskin, for one person to have chicken and one person to have milk at the same table. That would be a gzeira l'gzeira. However, Abaye says no, that this rule applies for everybody, even according to the opinion that says basar of bechalav, chicken with milk is only asar midrabanan. Why? De'ishar yisleh la'asuke of begvina, asi la'asuke basar ugvina umecho basar bechalav de'araisa. If we allow you to have chicken and milk at the same table, there's a concern you might come to a biblical violation of basar bechalav. So what exactly does this mean? This is not actually so clear. The way Rashi explains it, at least this way Prima Gadim understands Rashi, is this is an example of kula chad gzeira. Even though, generally speaking, we don't make a fence around a fence, but if the second fence is necessary to maintain, to uphold the first fence, if for some reason there's a concern that if we don't have the second fence, we'll come to a violation of a deraisa, so then we can make a gzera l'gzera. Sometimes this is known as kulachad gzera. It's all part of one gzera. Chazal said not only can't you have chicken and milk at the same, to eat them together, but you can't even have them on the same table. Now, the Rambam seems to give a different reason. The Rambam writes, gzera mishum hergel aveira, shema yochal ze im ze, afal pisha ofu basar b'chalav asher medivrayhem. Now, what does this mean exactly? It sounds like he's saying, and this is the way the Lecha Mishnah explains it, that for basar b'chalav, we do make gzeros l'gzeros. Very strange, right? B'chalav tarkula, we don't make gzera l'gzera. Basar b'chalav is different. We make gzera l'gzera. Why? Why would this be different? Kevan delo bedile in shimine, d'chal echad ape nafshe sharei. Because we're not used to separating ourselves from it, because each one on its own is permissible. And here we'll see this is the basis for a number of stringencies that we will find with respect to basar b'chalav that don't apply to other examples of ma'achalos asuros, other examples of prohibited foods. Why are we so much more machmir? The reason is because we are used to eating them. The food's kosher. When it comes to other non-kosher foods, foods that are actually non-kosher, so we never eat them. So there's less of a concern we're accidentally going to go ahead and eat pork or something like that. Why? Because we never do so. When it comes to basar b'chalav, since we always have milk, we always have meat, it's an unusual prohibition in the sense that both of them are independently permitted and only prohibited when mixed, so we're extra stringent. And therefore, in this case, we make gzera l'gzera. So that is the two explanations. And we'll see shortly, perhaps, a nafkamina between these two explanations. Yes? Ah, what a good point. Very good. We're going to get back to your point. Fabulous. First of all, you're absolutely right that we find chumros for Hilchos Pesach that we don't find for all other macholos asuros. And just to jump the gun to the point we'll say later, since you mamish got it right. So that's true. When it comes to all other macholos asuros, we don't say you could have two people, again, we'll get to this later, you don't have to write it down now, but just to highlight the correctness of your point, we don't say you have to have separation, right? Let's say you're at work and you're eating lunch with your coworker at the same table. So no, none of the restrictions that we have for basar b'chalav apply here. She's eating her clam chowder, you're eating your matzo ball soup, no concern that you're going to mix them, because you're not used to doing it. It's only when it comes to basar b'chalav and what you're suggesting is chametz. Why chametz? Because you're used to eating chametz. It's always permissible the rest of the year. Good. Fabulous. We'll get back to it. Okay. Now, what exactly is the concern? Again, the Mishnah said that two people can't eat at the same table, one basar, one chalav. Why? What are we concerned might happen? So, if you look at Rashi writes, Dilma asi lemechlenu ki adade, de kanagi uvali mehadade. We're concerned that they might cause, through touching, blios from one to go into the other. Now, what exactly are blios? So, blios are something, I think we introduced the topic last week, and we'll have a chance to elaborate upon them as we get into some of the details of basar b'chalav. But blios are a word we all have to learn. Blios are tiny food particles or taste particles. What exactly does that mean? So, the Torah tells us that not only can you not eat mamashus of non-kosher food, we'll first talk about non-kosher food, then we'll talk about basar b'chalav. Not only can't you eat mamashus of non-kosher food, that means the actual food, can't eat a piece of ham, but also taste, which is imparted from non-kosher food. Meaning to say that if I go ahead and I cook ham in water, and then I take out the ham, and I even filter the water, there's no ham left, it's just broth. So that too is usur. Why? Because the water has tam ham. It has the taste. And not only is mamasho usur, but also taimo vilo mamasho. Taimo means the tam, taamo, the tam, vilo mamasho, even though there's no actual meat. That is an isur d'oraisa. There are a couple of possible sources for this. One of the sources given in the Gemara is from the Parsha of Hechsher Kalim. That is when the Jews come back from fighting a war against Midian. So Moshe tells them, Lazar tells them actually, that they conquered, acquired Kalim from the Midianites. You can't just use these kalim. You have to kasher the kalim. Pasuk might also tell you about tefillas kalim. We'll get back to that later. You have to kasher the kalim, which means that if the Midianites use the kalim to cook ham, you have to kasher it before you cook your chicken soup. Now why? Why can't I just scrub it and make sure it's totally clean? So the answer is that not only is mamasho of non-kosher food asur, the actual food, but even the tam, even the taste. Now, what does that have to do with the taste? The idea is that there are little particles, taste, you know, why is it that chicken soup tastes like chicken, or at least the flavor of the water changes when you cook chicken in it, or vegetables, or the like, even once you remove the chicken? It's because there are little tiny taste particles, food particles, that leave the chicken and enter the water. Now, the same thing could happen with respect to pots and pans, meaning to say that if you have a pot that's porous, that there are little holes in it, so these taste particles can enter the pot, and theoretically, the next time you cook in that pot, those taste particles will be released from the pot and enter the food that you're cooking. So if the Midianite cooked ham in the pot, even if you've washed it out and cleaned it out, if you cook water in the pot, you'll taste a little bit of ham in your water. That is the idea. Now, if the Torah says I have to kasher kalim, what is the Torah telling me? Why isn't it enough just to scrub them? It's telling me that I have to be concerned even about tam, even about these little taste particles. Now, one of the great questions, the great deep dark mysteries of Hilchos Kashrus is the question that you're all probably wondering, which is that I've never really experienced this. I experienced it with food. There's no doubt that when you cook chicken in water, the water tastes different. It tastes like chicken soup. But when it comes to pots, generally speaking, maybe there's some rare exceptions. You know, in containers, plastic containers, sometimes you could tell a little bit of residual flavor or taste. You could tell what was heated in this the last time. But for the most part, if I go ahead and I cook chicken soup in a pot, and then I cook something else, I cook broccoli in that pot, you're not going to taste any, assuming you wash the pot in between, you're not going to taste any chicken in your broccoli. And when you have your plates and your knives and your forks and your spoons, you don't usually taste whatever was cooked the last time. So, one could argue that nowadays, you don't really need to have separate pots and pans for milchiks and fleishiks, or separate forks, or separate knives, or separate spoons, or separate plates. Now, why do I say nowadays? What changed? So what changed is really how pots are made. For example, stainless steel is non-porous. The truth is, it's not entirely non-porous, but it is much less porous than the types of pots that were traditionally used in the olden days. In other words, the Rishonim, the Gemara, tells us that it was common that you could actually taste the food or the remnants of the food that was cooked in the pot previously, or in the plates or in the forks or in the knives. Nowadays, with advancements of chemical engineering and the like, materials are generally made in such a way that you won't be able to tell. Now, it's not the case that they're totally non-porous. If, for example, you were to do some radioisotope testing, you would actually find that there are some residual particles from whatever was cooked in there previously in it the next time. But it's not really enough to ever come to a situation, or to regularly come to a situation, where you'll ever taste it. So, one might say, so I could have the same pots from Milchiks and Fleischiks. Truth is, it's not the worst argument in the world. It's not crazy. But the vast majority of poskim have said no. Doesn't really matter. Even though the particular concern is extremely unlikely, the Gemara already told us that there's a general low plug. Low plug was a concept we introduced last time. We'll see it again this time, just to remind ourselves. A low plug is that a lot of times when we're talking about dinim derabanan, they made the din derabanan apply across the board. And they didn't say in each and every time, well, let's see, is the reason applicable here? If it is, the rule will apply. If it's not, the rule won't apply. And the Gemara says that any time, for example, you cook something in a pot, let's say you cook something kosher in a treif pot, or you cook something milchiks in a fleishik pot, assuming the pot was used within 24 hours, we'll talk about why shortly, not this time, but shortly. So unless there is shishim, 60 times the quantity of the walls, that means the volume of the contents of the pot are 60 times the volume of the walls of the pot, we assume it's asr. Or technically speaking, according to the rules of the Gemara, you could actually have a non-Jew taste it and see if he tastes any tam. So what is that all about? The Gemara says, well, why do I always have to be so machmir? Let's say I can't tell the difference in terms of taste. It's the same taste. Why do I also have to assume it's shishim? Maybe sometimes it's 1/50th, 1/40th, and the like. And the Gemara says that they didn't want to have a situation where everybody assesses the shear each time. They wanted to have a single rule that applied across the board. And they said, therefore, up to shishim, it's always usher. And therefore, most poskim assume that even though nowadays, even if there is shishim, even if there's much less than shishim, we won't be able to taste those tam particles, nevertheless, it is a restriction that applies across the board. And that being the case, we are machmir, and we still insist, at least l'chatchila, that you should have separate milchiks and fleishik pots and pans and forks and knives and plates. Is it possible that some poskim will keep in the back of their mind this possibility? Maybe. Rabbi Schechter, actually, whenever you talk to him about this topic, he always says, yeah, we should have a big rabbi's convention and get together and decide that these rules don't apply to stainless steel anymore. That rabbi's convention has not yet happened. I think in the near future it's unlikely to happen, and even Rav Schechter would agree until it happens, you still need to keep your separate pots and pans. But it is interesting to note that to some degree, the reason why we're machmir to have separate pots and pans, the concern is not so likely anymore. And strictly speaking, we'll get back to this later, but strictly speaking, where the two tastes are different, let's say, again, this only works b'diavad, because l'chatchila, ideally, we'll talk about this later again, we don't try to be mevatel iser, we don't try to cause iser to be nullified, but according to the strict halacha based off of the Gemara, and according to Sfardim, this is still the halacha, if you ever cooked non-kosher food, or let's do milchiks and fleishiks, it's more likely. Somebody called me this Friday afternoon, and they, in their case, they went ahead and they were having a dairy meal. They cooked a pariv squash kugel, and they dipped in a fleischig knife or a spatula. It's not just now, it's not just, it was fleischigs, like it was used for fleischigs. It was actually something they were using, mamish, on the frying pan to cook, to fry chicken, and they used it to cut, or to, I think it was to check if it was done, to dip into their hot, boiling hot, pariv squash kugel that they were planning to serve at a milchig meal. So now, talk about why when we get there, but they were in big trouble. Not so much that could be done. It's kosher, but they couldn't really serve it at the milchig meal anymore because there was actually mamushas of chicken there. Strictly speaking, and if they were sfardim, they could have gone ahead and tasted it. And assuming there was no taste of meat, they could have had it with milchigs. It's not even so clear why Ashkenazim can't do that. But the practice is that even Ashkenazim don't do that. And we'll get to all these later. But that's because, strictly speaking, if there's no taste, there's no actual taste, you have nothing to worry about. But as I said, nevertheless, l'chatzchila, we use separate pots and pans for milchiks and fleishiks, and certainly for kosher and non-kosher. So, sorry. All right, go ahead. Non-kosher what? Non-kosher gum, yes. Aha. This is a good question. We'll talk about gelatin. There are a couple of additional factors over there. First of all, over there, it's a little more complex. First, the issue of gelatin isn't simple. There are those that are makel in general on gelatin. Poskim in America are generally machmir. Even amongst the mekilim, the machmirim, you could argue that gum is different because anyway, you don't swallow the non-kosher ingredients. But even if you didn't say that, even if you were, the chumra over there is an additional, couple of additional factors. One is, there you're actually inserting the non-kosher ingredient bekavana. It's not simply an issue of time. So the question is, are you allowed to insert non-kosher ingredients even in the event that you know that the taste will not be discernible? The answer is no. Now you'll say, well, I didn't insert the ingredients. The Wrigley's did. But first of all, is it still ideal to buy it? Many poskim say no. And second of all, they inserted it because it serves a purpose. And any time an ingredient serves a purpose, we might say it's not batel. They insert it for a reason. I don't know why the gelatin needs to be there, for texture, for some other reason, but it's serving a function. And again, another rule that we might see later on, the parameters of these rules we'll elaborate upon when we get there, but when something is inserted with intention to serve a function, we might not say that it's batel. And so since it's there for a reason, then it's there for a reason. Okay, now to go back to our question. So Rashi, again, what was our issue? The Gemara said, can't have milchiks and fleishiks at the same table. Why not? Rashi says they might touch each other. Uvali mehadadeh. Some dairy will be absorbed into the meat food. Meat will be absorbed into the dairy food. Then I'll eat that dairy food. Then I'll have eaten basar b'chalav. Now, it's not so clear. But sounds like from Rashi that it's not an issue that I'm going to eat them together, but rather they will absorb into each other. Now, here's another interesting rule, which we're going to, again, have a chance to see in detail as we go throughout the year. But generally speaking, when we're talking about blios, right, these particles of food that could go from one food to another food, or from one pot to the contents therein, it's only an issue when there is heat involved. Now, obviously, if there's mamushas, so then you don't need heat for mamushas. If a cold, greasy hamburger touches a piece of cheese, so some of that grease will go onto the cheese. But if there is no transfer of mamushas, meaning to say there's no actual substance of the meat on the dairy or dairy on the meat. For example, when you use a plate. You washed it off. So then there's only going to be an issue of transferring Tom when heat is involved. What level of heat and the like? Again, we'll get back to that question, but only when heat's involved. That's why, for example, when you go ahead and you drop something dairy on a meat plate, so one of the first questions you'll be asked is, was it hot? And how hot was it? If it's not sufficiently hot, it's not Yatza Lettuce, maybe if it's not a Kli Rishon or Eroi Kli Rishon, we'll say, it's okay, just wash it off. Why? Because there's no transfer of Tom. These tiny food particles are only transferred from one substance to another substance when heat's involved. Again, of course, assuming there's no mamashes, there's no actual substance. So when Rashi says the concern is that the meat and the dairy might be bali adade, and they might cause a transference from one to another, sounds a little bit like he's saying that we're not concerned about mamashes, we're concerned about Tom. This contrasts with the Lashon of the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch, also the Ran. The Shulchan Aruch writes on this halacha, Afilu basar chaya ve'of, asr la'loso al shulchan she'ochal alav gvina, shelo yavo l'achlam yachad. You may not have dairy and meat at the same table, lest you come to eat them together. Doesn't sound like the concern is that they're going to be, the tam, the taste, they're going to be intermingled. The concern is simply, I'm going to be eating my dairy food, and I'll take a bite of your food, and then I'm going to eat milchiks and fleishiks together. That's the yisr. Now, what's a nafkamina? Nafkamina, that the body of Shulchan suggests, is, let's say I have a cup of milk, right? Let's say you're eating meat, and I want to sit down with you. I'm not interested in eating a dairy meal. I'm drinking a cup of coffee. You're having your fleishig meal. Do we need some type of hecker, some type of separation? Those separations, what they are, we'll get to. But do we need some type of separation? Does the rule that we established, you can't have dairy and meat at the same time, does it apply here? So if you learn like Rashi, it won't apply. But if you learn like the Shulchan Aruch, it will apply. Since we're machmir like the Shulchan Aruch, because I could conceivably have milchiks and fleishiks at the same time. For example, I take a bite of your spaghetti and meatballs and then wash it down with my coffee with milk, right? So then the halacha would apply. So therefore the halacha is that any dairy at the table cannot be eaten together at the same time as meat. Oh, so here is a very common question. Comes up all the time. We have little children in our house. They have their bottles of milk, their sippy cups full of milk. They're always running around with them. And they always, put them on the table. So we're having our Shabbos fleishig meal, and all of a sudden a child comes up, and he puts his bottle down on the table, or his sippy cup full of milk on the table. They have to worry about it. So maybe he'll say that if we follow the Shulchan Aruch, it should be usher. So I think here, one could be lenient. Think here it's okay. Because there's no way in a million years I'm going to drink from his bottle or sippy cup. Now, it's true he might take some food from my plate, but I'm not so worried about that. We'll talk about the halachos of basar v'chalav for ketanim next week, God willing. But they're lo yigia l'chinuch. I don't have to worry too much if they're drinking milk and they grab a piece of, meatball off of my plate. We'll talk again about the rules there later on. But since, for me, right, the issue is for me, there's no practical concern that I'm ever going to go ahead and drink from his bottle, I think one could be lenient. Now, so that's the, yeah. Because since it's a cold milk, there's no concern of blios mehadade. That's it. But the question is the concern only when there could be blios one into the other, or is it that I could mix them together? So I might mix it together in the sense that I'll have a meatball in my mouth and I'll wash it down with some milk. But that's not bali ahadade. They're not going to absorb one into the other because there's no heat. If both are cold, there wouldn't be a problem. both are hot, it would be a problem. If one is hot, it would be a problem. But either way, again, halach l'maisa, I think we follow the view of the Shulchan Aruch. So it doesn't really matter. Yeah.
Why are you not worried about either the first piece or the second one? You have no filling on the first piece just because there's no isser in mixing them in that part?
I think the answer is as follows. You're not going to do that. Then you'll notice. In other words, then I'll notice and I won't eat it. I'm taking that risk by not removing the bottle from the table. Meaning to say, the issue here is absent-minded eating. Right? We're talking about here about people that keep kosher. Rashi's concern is the two foods will touch each other. Won't notice that they touched each other. And they'll be bali mehadade, and I'll eat them. Splashing without noticing, I'm not worried about. If this nafkamina is correct. Right, again, I think if you noticed, you know. You could reject this nafkamina. I hear what you're saying, and I'm not convinced the nafkamina is right. But if you.
What if there's two different people, and there's no concern about
them? Oh, great question. We're going to address that. It's a very good question, right? Excellent. We'll get there in just a couple minutes. Okay. Now, so again, so far the Mishnah told us two people eating together at the same table, one's eating milchiks, one eating fleishiks, aser. The Mishnah writes, so who are we concerned about? So the Mishnah writes, Rashbag Omer, Beis Achsanayin Ochel al Shulchan Echad, two guests at a hotel can eat at the same table, one eats milchiks, one eats fleishiks. The Gemara explains, that's only talking about She'ein Makir and Zezah. They don't know each other. What's the reason for that? Very simple. That if I don't know somebody, I'm not going to simply take a piece of food off their plate and eat it. The way the Shach explains it is that if they're misbaishim zemizeh, if practically speaking, you're not going to eat off your friend's plate, so then it's okay. If there is a concern you'll eat off your friend's plate, then it's not okay. So that's the way we paskin. We paskin like the Shach. And therefore we have the following question, right? This was basically our question. Generally speaking, two people, this might not have been as true in the olden days, maybe people weren't as concerned about germs or etiquette has changed, but nowadays, most of the time, if I'm eating with a friend, I'm not going to start picking the food off their plate, even if they're a good friend. In other words, what did the Gemara say? The Gemara says, if you don't know the guy, so then it's okay, you're not going to eat off his plate. The implication is that if you do know the guy, you might. Maybe that's true in the olden days. Nowadays, usually you don't eat off of other people's plates. Now, it's not entirely true. Friends eat together, like I have fries, and you know my friend who's eating with me might feel free to help himself to some of my fries. But many types of foods, that doesn't apply. So, what's the halacha? So the truth is, it's not so clear. One could make the case that when it's a relationship where this is a concern, so let's say husband and wife, I think it isn't so uncommon, or parents and children, to eat off each other's plates. I, for example, told you about my eating leftovers, so I also eat my kids' leftovers. Hopefully not when I'm eating fleishiks and they're eating milchiks. So they have, you know, they go ahead, they eat half their food, then they run away and go play. So it is not uncommon that I'll finish their plates. So if that's true, so the truth is even nowadays, right, it's not for people with certain types of relationships, spouses or kids or maybe even roommates, you know. If my roommate is eating something and think it looks really good, I might ask, could I try a bite? But what about if you have a situation where practically that's not going to happen? You're not going to eat off of their plates. They're not going to eat off of your plates. Maybe we should say that that's like shnei achsinayin, two people that don't know each other, where we say this rule doesn't apply. As long as the two people don't know each other, it doesn't apply. It's not a bad theory. Again, I think the poskim are machmir. And generally speaking, we assume that any time the two parties know each other, you shouldn't eat together one milchiks, one fleishiks at the same table. Why? Where do they get this from? Maybe because the Gemara itself implies that this halacha is a low plug. There's a case where the Gemara says itself that these rules apply as a low plug. And therefore, generally speaking, we would recommend that you not eat at the same table with friends, with acquaintances. Now, we should note that we don't go, you know, there's a limit to this. For example, if we're eating at opposite ends of the table and I can't reach the other person's food, right, we're too far from each other to just simply absentmindedly reach over and grab something, then it would actually be okay. Then there would be no problem. In other words, the halacha is still rooted in the basic concern that I might accidentally or without carefully thinking grab something that belongs to them. And the point, though, that we're saying is we don't start calculating, well, is this, you know, a messy food like that it's likely, or is it a not, it's unlikely, or is it not a messy food that it's likely? Is it a friend that I'm likely to take their food or not? You know, am I squeamish about germs or not? To go ahead and figure out in each case how likely it is, so that would be too confusing. So we say a low plug, if they're your friend, you don't know them, it's fine, but if they're your friend and they're within reaching distance, you shouldn't do it. We'll see in a moment, though, that there are things that can be done to avoid the problem. Just one more point. The Gemara says that... Oh, let's see. Was there a question? I'll take it first. Yes.
So what if there's two people, and let's say one of them is not going to sell it, one's gluten-free. So like, there's really no chance that they're
So I would think if one is makbid about Chalav Yisrael and the other one is eating Chalav Stam, then maybe it would be okay, because that for you is like something Isser, your B'dili Minei, right? And you maybe, you would say the same thing if they're eating something glutinous and I'm allergic to gluten. No, it would only go one way. It would have to be that I'm makbid on Chalav Yisrael, and they're makbid on Beis Yosef. So I can't eat their milchik's food, and they can't eat my fleishik's food, right? So in that case, maybe it would be okay. I hear. Yes? And you're near them. So we'll see. There's actually an opinion in the Shulchan Aruch. You know, we'll get to that shortly. We'll get there. Good question. Okay. Yes. Now, the Shach says that the basis of the concern is that you might eat from his plate. And therefore, if they don't really know each other, or they're so... They technically know each other, but they're... of such a distant relationship that they would always be embarrassed to eat off each other's plate, so then it would be okay. I think we would. If it's a distant, if it's like an acquaintance that you don't have any relationship with, you know their names, but you're not their friends, then it could be okay. Okay. Now, the Gemara says it's only usher ke'en tfisa achas. Now, what exactly does that mean, ke'en tfisa achas? So there's actually a big machlokas harishonim, what that means. Tosfos, in one interpretation, says that means that if there's some type of hefsik between them, some type of separation, so then it's okay. So now we're going to start getting into the cases, the leniencies, the ways to solve this problem. And therefore, Tosfos says, ulefikach nagin achshav, kishaze ochel basar, vize ochel gvina, al shochan echad, menichen lechem o kankan, o shar kelim lahafsik beintayim, o ochel al mapa acheres. Tosfos says, I have a solution. What could we do? If I'm eating milchiks, you're eating fleishiks at the same table, so we will put a loaf of bread in between them. Now we'll see shortly that's only if we're not eating from that loaf of bread. Or we put a kankan, a jug, in between us. Or a shar kalim, let's say a vase or a napkin holder. We'll have to see what constitutes. We're going to limit these halachos. But you put some kli in between them. Lahafsik beinayim, to separate between them. Or they could eat al mapacheres, on a different tablecloth or a placemat. All these solve the problem. Why? So the simple understanding is these are what's called a hecker. A hecker is a reminder. Remember, what's our concern? We're talking about here about people that keep kosher. They're not going to consciously eat basar b'chalav. The concern is that when you're eating together with your friends and you're schmoozing, you're having a good time, you could absentmindedly take something without thinking about it, since you're at the same table, you're right near each other. Well, once we have some type of hecker, some type of reminder, so then that concern is solved. When there's a vase in between us, so that's the solution. So now, there are a couple of important limitations here. First of all, in order to be a reminder, it has to be something that's somewhat unusual. In other words, if this is always here, in the middle of our table, we always have a napkin holder to take napkins. And we're sitting across from each other, and the napkin holder is always in the middle. And this is there every time we eat. So that's not a hecker, that's not a reminder. Even though it's in between us, it's not a reminder. It has to be something that's somewhat unusual to serve as a reminder. Another thing is that it has to be something that's noticeable. So the poskim say if it's flat, if there's no height to it, so then that's insufficient. Now, no shear is given exactly how high it has to be. But presumably, if it's something very small, thin, unnoticeable, it doesn't work. Something bigger, more noticeable, let's say I put my watch in between us. So I think even though watches aren't so high, that's sufficient. I'm going to notice it. It's unusual. If every time I eat, I put my cell phone down on the table, so that's not going to be a hecker. But if I would never be so rude as to keep my cell phone on the table, so then it is a hecker. Likewise, if the thing in between us is something that we're eating from, so then it's not a hecker. But if it's not, we put a loaf of bread down at the table. Neither of us are eating bread. It's not common to have a loaf of bread at the table between us. So then, that is a hecker. Many poskim say that it has to be actually in between us. In other words, if it's on the side of the table, that doesn't help. Why? It won't be a reminder. It won't be a hecker. And that's what the Gemara set means when it says that if they are not betfisa achas, it's okay. Here's another interpretation of the Gemara that would not allow this. But we're makel to allow this. One of the reasons is because there's a Gemara about harchakos for anida and Shabbos that implies that this is a sufficient heter. So this is the halacha that a hecker of this sort works. Now, very interesting question that comes up is, does a hecker work if it's just one person? Now, what do I mean it's just one person? On this table is Milchik's food. I'm eating Fleishik's food. So could I just put a hecker between the Milchik food that's on the table and the Fleishik food that I'm eating? So some say, yes, what difference should it make? That is the view of the Chachmas Adam. However, the Darkei Tshuva quotes Machmirim, and that's because the Gemara in Shabbos implies that the only reason why a hecker works is because it's shnei deos. There are two people that might remind each other. Now, there's a hecker works because there's actually a double level of protection. Number one, the hecker will remind me. Number two is if my friend sees me about to take a piece of their food that's fleishiks while I'm eating milchiks, they say, wait. But if I don't have both of those criteria met, namely it's not deos plus hecker, it's just hecker or just deos, just two different people, that's insufficient. And therefore, if you're eating fleishiks at a table where there's some milchiks food, you have to remove the milchiks food from the table, or at least stay far enough away from it so you wouldn't grab it. And I think generally speaking, you know, I'm not sure how we paskin. I saw Rabbi force things for machmir, and ideally one should be machmir, but again, if it's so far away from you, you're not going to absent-mindedly grab it, then it's okay. Now, yes. Yeah, so I think that you could make that case that it would be okay, but as Shuli pointed out, it would only, the other person would still be a problem. Unless, right? So it would only work if the other fellow's us, you know, allergic to meat, and you're allergic to milk. So that happens. Yeah. Well, if we're not eating from it, it wouldn't be a problem. If we're both eating from it, as we said, it's not a hecker. Right. We'll get to those halachos next week, God willing. But that halacha only applies when we're eating from the bread. Right? If the bread is not being eaten from by the... That's one of the reasons we'll see next week that Rav Moshe writes that the part of the loaf that's uncut, even if it's at the table, that halacha doesn't apply. It's only to the sliced bread at the table, because that's what people are touching with dirty hands, potentially. So placemat works, even though there's no height, because it's considered a more significant hacker. But once we're on the topic of placemats, let's mention that it has to be something unusual. Meaning, say, if we always eat on placemats, it wouldn't help. But if we usually don't eat on placemats, or let's say one person uses a placemat while the other one doesn't, or one person uses a milchik placemat while the other one is fleishik, that would be okay. But if these are standard placemats that look the same and we always use placemats, so then there's nothing unusual. It's not a hecker. If one person uses a tablecloth and sort of puts a tablecloth on half the table and the other person eats directly on the table, that would be okay. I would think that's okay, because as long as that's a hacker, everybody notices, you know, my placemat green, your placemat is blue, I think that would be a hacker. Okay. Now, you asked the question before, what about if other people are at the table? So the Pischei Tshuva quotes Amasis ben Yamin that if other people are at the table, that works. The Amasis ben Yamin. Now, this halacha, according to many poskim, applies when it comes to harchakos for anida. Just to briefly outline that, there is a halacha, seemingly for very different reasons, but with similar, if not identical, rules, that says that if you have a couple and the wife is anida, then they shouldn't eat at the same table without some type of hecker. And when it comes to a hecker, the same type of heckers work, like a object, like a vase in between them, or different placemats, or the like. Now, many poskim say that doesn't apply if there are other people at the table. Meaning to say, if it's a husband and a wife and a third party, then no hecker is needed. Now, here's the interesting question. Over there, the reason is probably because without a hecker, we're concerned of kiruv hadas, we're concerned of intimacy, which might arise during the course of the meal. And we say if somebody else is around, so there's no concern. But when it comes to grabbing food off of somebody else's plate, so if I'm still within reaching distance of them, what difference does it make if there's someone else who's eating parav at the table? The concern should still apply. And that's why this ruling in the Masses Ben Yamin is very hard to understand. Therefore, I think we would be machmir if the third party is in between them, then probably it's okay. But if the person eating milchiks and fleishiks are still next to each other or across from each other, the third party shouldn't make a difference. I think there's a yeshiv for that Masses Ben Yamin. The Masses Ben Yamin thinks that the concern by nida of intimacy will only happen if they eat from the same plate. So if the third party prevents them from eating, then that's the basis, and then you could extrapolate, but that's a bit of a chiddush. Yeah. So again, that goes back to our earlier question, which is, if you have two friends eating at a table, even without anybody else, where it's not socially acceptable. So one could really argue that it should be okay. But we said that generally we're still machmir, because it's a low plug. So I think having the third party wouldn't affect that. Okay. So we mentioned before that this only applies if both of the foods are kosher. If one food is treif, like somebody's eating non-kosher food because they're not Jewish, this wouldn't apply. Likewise, we mentioned before that the Rashba points out that the exception to this is chametz, and that's because chametz, or at least one reason for this, is because chametz is generally mutter. The other reason why chametz might be an exception is because we're always more machmir when it comes to chametz because it's an iser kares. What about if I, yeah. Fine. Right, because I'm used to, there's no concern I'm accidentally going to eat non-kosher. I never eat non-kosher. It's only a concern when they're both kosher and I always eat milk. So there's more of a concern I'll absentmindedly forget. What about if I ate fleishiks an hour ago and I'm sitting at the table with someone eating milchiks? So what's the halacha over there? Do we say that since it's usher for me to eat milchiks now because I'm fleishiks, let's assume you wait 6 hours, so it's usher, or are we more lenient? So the Beis Yaakov is machmir. However, the Prima Gadim is Mako, and I think the Minag is to be Mako. I think one could be Mako here. One could be lenient. And we'll see that even though there is an Isser, first of all, for Ashkenazim, probably the Isser is only Mita Minhag, as we'll get to next week. But even for Sfardim, where it's Aser Mikra Adin to eat Milchiks within 6 hours of eating Fleishiks, we're still much more lenient about that than in cases where there's an actual concern they'll be eaten together at the same time. There may be leniencies that apply there. As we'll see, for example, even if you're fleishiks, you could eat food cooked in a milchig plate, a milchig pot, and other certain leniencies that we'll see. So in that case, I think one could be lenient. You don't have to start worrying just because you're fleishiks, if you're sitting with your roommate who's eating milchiks, sitting down at the table with her, that you'd need to start putting up a hecker and a harchaka and the like. One other halacha that comes up in this siman, just mention it, is that if two people, one is eating milchiks, one is eating fleishiks, they shouldn't share a cup. And likewise, I shouldn't drink from the same cup, at least without washing it, for a milchiks and a fleishik meal. Now this comes up with water bottles, for example. Let's say I have a water bottle and I was using this water bottle while eating fleishiks. I shouldn't use that same water bottle while eating milchiks, because there's a concern that there might be residue on the lip, or maybe some bits of food fell in, and the like. That doesn't mean, again, if it's not at the same time mamish, I think it would be okay. But to use a water bottle that you were drinking from at a milchik meal, and then to use that same water bottle at a fleishiks meal, without having washed it off in between, would be a problem. L'chatchila, ideally, it sounds like this might not even be mi'ikara din mamish, but it's something where we show zihiras.
If a person finishes their meal, they finish their whatever it is, and then they is that okay, or they really?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think if odds are, if it looks clean and it feels clean, you could assume in that case that it is clean. Obviously, if it looks greasy, there's nothing to talk about. No, I meant like the water bottle, like the lip or something like that. If you think your mouth was clean, your lips were clean, and it looks like the water bottle's clean and the like, I don't think you have to be choshesh. Well, maybe somehow or another it got dirty because your mouth was dirty from before, the like. I think in that case you could probably be lenient. Yeah, I think so. Okay, so we're out of time, and I didn't get to Parsha. Anybody want to do a little Parsha, even though it's late? Okay, little Parsha. This week is Parshas Lech Lecha. Towards the beginning of the Parsha, Avram goes down to Mitzrayim with Sarai and Lot because of the famine. Now, we're told in next week's Parsha that Lot did an incredible thing during this journey, and because of the incredible thing, he merited savior during the story of the destruction of Sodom and Amorah. What was this amazing schus that Lot did? Something which caused him to be saved. So the Medrash tells us, Rashi quotes it, that plan A to protect Sarai was that Avram put her in a box, put her in a suitcase, and he was hoping that nobody would notice her, that Paro would not see her beauty, and she would not be abducted, as in fact she was. She was discovered. But this was plan A. Now Lot knew of this plan, and he didn't tell anybody. Because of that incredible mitzvah, he was saved. I have a question for you. What's so great about that? Only like the lowest scoundrel in the world would have the havamina to tell the authorities that his aunt is inside this box such that she might get kidnapped. Where is the mitzvah? So he kept quiet and didn't reveal this great secret. That does not seem like much of a mitzvah to me, much of a schus. If we were looking for a schus for Lot, by which we would say he was saved, maybe say his incredible hachnasas orchim to the angels when he protected them at the risk of his own life. Now, to be sure, he did it in a very strange way, but ultimately he was machnis orech, and he was moser nefesh for hachnasas orchim. So, A, what's the big deal that he didn't say anything about Sarai? That's not a mitzvah at all. That would just be disgusting if he said anything. And B, why don't we look? Why don't Chazal give an example of something that's a real mitzvah when they're looking for a schus by which Lot would be saved? And the answer, I think, Rav Dessler says something along these lines, is as follows. It's a very profound yesod that's relevant to all of our avodas Hashem. And that is that we are not judged objectively, but we are judged based off of what's hard for us, what's a challenge for us. When we read all the stories about Lot, one thing becomes clear. Lot had an issue with chemdas mamon, with money. He loved money, couldn't get enough money. He goes ahead and his shepherds get in a fight with Avram's shepherds because he was stealing, because he wanted money. He lives with stone because he wants to live in an affluent neighborhood despite the surroundings, and so on and so forth. And Lot, when he went down to Egypt and he knew of Sarai's being in the box, he could have thought to himself, cha-ching! If I just go ahead and secretly tell the right people, you know who's in that box, beautiful lady, he would have came out a millionaire, right? Look how much money Avram got at the end. Ugh. And therefore, for him not to say anything was a challenge for him, based off of his struggles. And it's true, we might say that we would never dream of doing something like that. But everybody's different. And for him, that was the challenge, because he struggled with money. What about Achnasas Orchim? Achnasas Orchim is something very hard for many people. It's on my own space, my own stuff, my own privacy. But not for Lot. Lot lived around Avram. He, after so many years of living in Avram's tent, he appreciated the mitzvah of Achnasas Orchim. It almost became natural. It was something that was easy for him. It's true, he did a great job, but it was easy. So that wasn't a special schus. And this is something that we always have to keep in mind. You know, there are certain mitzvos that come naturally to some people and are very difficult for other people. For some people, being generous is easy. For others, it's hard. For some people, tefillah is easy. Relating to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, having a close relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, comes naturally. Others, very hard. And both when it comes to judging ourselves and judging others, we have to keep this in mind. In the end of the day, as we see from this story, in God's eyes, we of course don't know what's in God's eyes in terms of ourselves, and certainly not others. But in God's eyes, what's important is not so much objectively how much you accomplish, but really it's all about the struggle. If you do something that's hard for you, even if it's not such a big deal, so we could see from Lot, that could be the basis of an incredible mitzvah. And that's not to say you shouldn't do mitzvahs that are easy for you. But when you do things that are easy for you, you know, you don't have to give yourself so much credit, because this was easy, this was natural. For other people it might be very hard, for me it was easy. And that's something that we should always keep in mind. It really, especially when going through a challenge, it's not so much about objectively what you accomplish, but really it's about how much you accomplish, and based off of what's easy or difficult for you. Have a good night.